Hello, you're listening to Laser Graves, a podcast where we dig up movies, music, books, and events from the 80s and discuss how rad they were. Are you ready to get this thing started? Okay. Hi.
Hey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Laser Graves. I'm EK.
Lord of the Dogs, Wimmer?
Oh.
I've dropped it all.
Yeah.
Just to commit to Lord of the Dogs.
The third. And
the first.
So we're back with another episode. Mm-hmm. We are giving you guys a break this week from the cheesy movies, and we're doing a book. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome sauce.
It's a book that I have never read until now.
You have now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, have I. And it's a big one for you, Mariah. This was your stronghold, the make or break this podcast. You were going to cover this book.
Yeah, I had to read it again.
Why?
I am not sure. There were like two books in my childhood that gave me like some sort of, I don't know, like nightmares, but also they were titillating, like real exciting. Maybe titillating was the wrong word.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to take seriously.
No, I don't use it normally. It felt uncomfortable. Ignore that.
Try something else.
I can't. I'm literally only thinking of the word titillating now. Anyway, this book and another one will cover The House on Hackman's Hill were the two books that made me sleep on the bunk bed in my brother's room until I was an embarrassingly old age of 12.
I think everybody had those books as kids.
Yeah.
I had a book that I read in like third grade, and it was about a mummy, and I don't remember the name of it.
Was it The House on Hackman's Hill?
I don't think it was. Oh. But it gave me the creeps for sure, because I had a thing for mummies when I was a kid, and I always thought they were going to come back, because I saw Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, real early as a kid, and there's that one in there with Christian Slater when the mummy comes back. Do you remember
that?
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
So I always, like, I've had a weird fascination with being creeped out by mummies my whole life, but I don't know what that book was. And then Scary Stories, obviously, like...
For sure.
Several of them gave me the creeps, but I think it's good to be scared. And this one...
It's good to be horrified.
This one was interesting. The whole time I was reading it, I was wondering what the age group was, because there was some pretty chilling moments for sure.
I think it's like 12.
Yeah.
Like tweenagers.
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of like a Goosebumps, kind of maybe a little older than Goosebumps.
Yeah, I was probably about 12 when I read it, maybe a little bit younger. I don't know.
So we're talking about Wait Till Helen Comes.
Wait Till Helen Comes.
There was a cassette tape that came out with it, and that's what the song was, right?
Yeah, yep.
I thought for I recognized sure, that sure. jingle.
I did not just do that.
Well, before we get started, anything you wanted to share with everybody? Or you didn't get out to any thrift stores this week, so we can't really do...
I've been in an isolation chamber. I've been sick. Our family's been sick, except for you for some reason.
Super genes.
Whatever. Anyway, I've been sick. Our family's been sick. I've just been trapped in our home in a giant germ pit. You might notice that my voice sounds super sexy, and I may or may not break into cough as we continue this podcast.
Or smelly cat.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. I don't sound that sexy.
Sucks that you've been sick and everybody's been sick but me.
Except for it doesn't suck for you.
No. I was out of town, too. I had to go to Kansas. And I did have some thrift store finds that I will share because people really care about what I find at the thrift store. No, I found some cool stuff, a lot of VHS tapes, but the big one was yesterday. So there is this Goodwill in town, one in particular that I had gone to several months in a row and they never put out any VHS. And I finally called a manager and I said, why do you not put out any VHS, except for Disney, all the dumb clamshell things mm-hmm. that people think are really collectible, but they're not. And he said, because nobody buys those. And I said, well, I'll buy them. And he said, all right. And so the next week I went in and he didn't put them out. And one of the kids that works there felt bad and said, well, you can come in the back storage room and look through this big bin back there. So I dug through it and I found like a copy of Candyman, which was really cool. And I'm like, all right, that was awesome. That was worth it. And then flash forward to the week after, this week, I walk in just to see if they were going to like keep it up.
They were like, dude, let's see how weird this grown-up guy
really
will
weird.
Do. Were you like leaned over into a bucket, head lost?
So Goodwill will do these giant, they're like, I don't even know how long they are, like maybe 3 or 4 feet by 4 feet, about 3.5 feet high. They're huge, just bins that everything goes in. And then they usually sort that in the back room mm-hmm. and then bring the good stuff out. They just wheeled one of these giant plastic things out into the middle and put a sign that was like media, VHS and DVD for sale. And I walked in and my eyes were like, ding. And
you basically texted me or like, see you whenever.
Yeah, I'll see you later. And I went through, but there were so many, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in there. And like records, tapes, and they were all out of their cases and broken. It was just like a garbage pit that nobody had gone through yet. So I started digging through. I found like The Bride of Chucky and I was all excited, but it had a copy of Purple Rain inside of it instead. And I was like,
you went for like a deep dive.
Oh, big time. Yeah. And
whoa.
Then I was looking and looking. And then all of a sudden I just started to unearth just gem after gem. I got John Carpenter's The Fog. I got Amityville Horror. I got, the list Dawn of the Dead. It just kept going and going and going.
So were the other patrons of this Goodwill just staring at you and like...
Not that day. So then I went back today because I was hurrying to get home so that I could see the family and eat dinner and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to have to come back because I couldn't even scratch the surface because it's like, it's hard to move stuff around and look underneath and it's deep. And so I went back today after work and I grabbed a couple shopping carts and just started taking handfuls and putting them into the shopping carts so that I could get further down in. And people were coming up and asking me. One guy was like, what are you even doing? And I said, I'm looking at VHS, man. And he's like, okay. And then a couple people asked me where stuff was because they thought I was working. One woman thought I was doing community service and was having to sort them. But I'll have you know, on top of everything that I found yesterday, I found some really good stuff today, too. So it was worth it, but I had to put everything back, which sucked. So,
Did you have to put it back?
Yeah.
Were they like...
I was being nice.
Weird adult male.
But let me list you off just a few of the highlights that
okay.
I found. Warlock.
Uh-huh.
Warlock Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn of the Dead, Amityville Horror, American Werewolf in London, Maximum Overdrive, Legend of Hell House, The Fog,
oh my gosh.
Psycho. It just kept going on and on and on. I was like, dude.
So we have a lot of VHS now.
Well, we have some good stuff. It was worth it. And they were all, you know, like 25 and 50 cents. So bada boom.
Okay.
It was
bada boom.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad that I spent 10 minutes talking about that.
That was a lot of VHS talk.
What I'm doing is overcompensating for you so you could live vicariously through me.
Because I
thrifting.
Care so much about VHS.
No, because you didn't get to thrift. You're feeling sick and sad.
I am.
While
listen
I was digging
voice.
Through
it's so
garbage
raspy.
Heaps. Okay. Well, let's get to it. I don't think we have anything else to discuss.
What?
Let's get into this book. We have been, this is gag order week, where you've been desperately trying to coerce me to tell you what I thought of this
yeah.
book. And I kept going, just you wait. You wait.
Wait till Helen comes.
Wait till Helen comes on Friday. And so, or in the listener's case on Tuesday. So we get to finally discuss it. All right. Let's break the ice because you're dying to know what I thought of the book.
What did you think of the book?
What did you think of the book first? Because I know that you like it, but I don't know what you really think of the book.
Well, I loved it when I was a kid, but I hadn't done like a tremendous amount of reading. At that point in my life, obviously I was a 12-year-old or younger. So as an adult, I mean, it's a solidly written little ghost story. It's totally classic and I loved it. I felt like the author really loves children. What's her name? Mary Downing Hahn. She loves children and she wrote a book that was just the right amount of scary for kids in the age range for which she was writing. It was great.
It was. So let's a little backstory on her. She's from Maryland. She grew up in a little tiny town.
So did you think she made jokes all the time about this is your land because she's Maryland?
No, I don't.
I would straight do that.
So it's kind of neat because that's where this book takes place mm-hmm. too. And she grew up like running around wild in the forest and stuff. So, she was a librarian.
She still is, isn't she?
No, she retired when her book started to take off in the 80s or maybe early 90s. But she started writing in late 70s, still writes. Her last book just came out last year, 2018. And she seems like a really sweet woman. A lot of them, they're all horror themed for the most part. And
you can tell she's a reader too.
Oh, like, yeah,
she just
for sure.
loves literature.
Well, she has her degree in literature. So she was an English and art major, that she was a double major.
Did she do the cover, this amazing cover of Wait Till Helen Comes?
I was thinking she might have, because she's actually made a career as an illustrator as well.
So she's like really good.
Yeah, she's like I don't know if she did this one or not, but she's definitely like does professional illustration too.
Because this cover, if you guys see it, let me describe it. So there's like a graveyard scene. There's an oak tree. It's like a blues in the background, like a night sky. And there is, behind the oak tree, a young, like, blondish girl with a ponytail, just, like, full 80s sweatshirt, jeans, staring at a green glowing ghost in a white dress. But the green glowing ghost is staring at a little girl in the most 1980s sweatshirt I've ever seen. It's, like, gray with, like, little toggles of green and yellow and blue, and
it's that 80s design.
Yeah, it's just like red patches. It's great.
If she had her school portrait, there would be lasers behind her.
Yes,
for sure.
And there's like a smidge of a hint of a mullet.
Is there? It's because like I'm going to say there's no hint.
Well,
it is big mullet.
It's implied that it's kind of tucked behind her ears.
Look at the bangs.
Well, okay.
It's a mullet. That's the best part of this whole book, because when I saw this cover, every time she was frowning and complaining and being mean, I was like, but she has this crazy mullet.
She's messed up.
Couldn't take her seriously with that mullet.
So, yes. And so the girl with a mullet is staring at the ghost whilst being spied upon by another girl. It's great. It's a really cool painting.
It is
cool. And if it were for sale, I would buy it.
Yeah, for sure.
And it would scare me.
But yeah, that's a mullet, honey. There's no.
It's a mullet, honey.
There is.
Let me tell you, as a mullet connoisseur,
I know a mullet when I see it. That is definitely a Tennessee top hat.
Okay.
It's a Kentucky waterfall.
Everybody knows mullets are funny now.
Okay, but this was cool back then, and now they're retro again.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll post this. It'll be on our Instagram. You can look at it and examine it in great detail. Mm-hmm. That's our character. So that's kind of the what we had to go off of for a visual. I don't know if you used those characters in your head or created some different ones.
No, I think I used them pretty well. I don't know. The cover of this book really lends itself to your imagination. So I definitely, as a kid, that's what I used when I imagined my way through this book. And it just kind of is cemented as an adult for sure.
Yeah. So Wait Till Helen Comes, A Ghost Story by Mary Downing Hahn. 1986. Mm-hmm. Do you want to start it off?
Okay, so let's just dive right in. Chapter one begins with brother and sister, Molly, who is 12, I believe, and
yes.
Michael, who is 10. They're surprised by their parents, which, for the record, if you're going to surprise your kids with something, do not surprise them with a move. That's a bad idea.
Such a horrible beginning.
Can you even imagine?
This is the beginning of a reoccurring theme in this book of their parents sucking.
Yeah,
like,
they
are probably two of the characters I don't know if I've hated characters this much in a long
time. They're real bad parents. So mom surprises them that she and their stepdad have purchased an old church. And the family's going to move, not just move to a new house, but move to a new community. They're leaving Baltimore, which now I guess has a really high murder rate. So perhaps that's great. And they should be happy they're moving to Hallwell, Maryland. But they're going to go live in a church with the brother and sister, Molly and Michael, their mom, Jane, their stepdad, Dave,
mm-hmm.
and their stepsister, Heather, who, like, right from the get-go seems soups lame. She's cranky and weird and clingy to her dad and not very warm to the brother and sister.
Yeah, it's immediately clear that she doesn't like them. She's clingy with her dad because it's this mixed family. you know, with losses in the family, and they've come together trying to merge them. And, yeah, it's really awkward, but right away I was just so confused at the way the parents were like, look, this is surprise, what we're doing. Isn't this great?
And but isn't that kind of 80s?
Yeah. The mom is a painter. The dad is a potter. And they're going to have studio space. So I'm getting the impression right away, they're like, we're doing this all for us. Deal with it and don't complain.
But on the other hand, like, they're taking their kids out to a forest, to a smaller town, safer community. I could see where they want their kids to, like, leave a city and enjoy nature.
Yeah, I suppose so. But there's, so we find out about Heather, the little girl. She's definitely off. Her mother died in a fire is what we find out. When she was three, Molly says, I love this thing where she's, quote, she should have gotten over it by now.
Yeah.
But she's seven now, okay. I think. Yeah, seven.
4 years is enough time to get over your mother burning to death. No biggie.
And she also implies that maybe the three-year-old did it. Maybe she set her mom on fire. Like, okay. Yeah.
I would imply that, too, based on Heather's behavior.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a stretch. So they go from Baltimore to this place in the country. Parents are acting pretty selfish.
Hold on. We got to talk about this situation out there. Their house.
Yeah. This seems like your dream come true. Okay, so this is the first indication of me going, oh, this is why Mariah loves this book.
Yes.
On multiple levels, both as the kid and as the parent, because...
Not the crappy parenting, but the home.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, and then the idea of being an artist, too, and having your own, like, church studio.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also, the author has made a map that you can see at the beginning of the book, so you get a, like, layout of their landscape, which I loved.
That's true. I forgot about that.
And as a kid, I remember looking at it and, like, going, okay, so they went from here to there. And, like, as I looked through the book, I'd flip back to the map and follow along with it. Are you doing it right now?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the map. Are you going to describe their land, where they moved?
Why don't you, since you're looking at the map?
Well, they moved to a church, but they say the church doesn't have a steeple, but it's clear that it was a church.
Mm-hmm.
It has an addition that's been put on for a living space. There's a big field to the side, and then there's woods in the back and a marsh. And then, like, the city's one way, and the town is a few miles another way. And there's a little pond. But then as the kids start exploring on day one, they discover that there is a little graveyard in the back. And the graveyard is small. It's from the 1800s. And Heather's kind of a little goth in the making. And Molly is a super drama queen about the graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And so Heather's like, wants to be like Wednesday Addams. And Molly's like, it's just very overly dramatic. There's a lot of crying from her in this book. But that's what they find. This kind of kicks off the plot of the whole book, is now they're in this isolated former church that actually has a little graveyard in the back.
I absolutely loved it. And I think this is probably the origin story for my daydream about, as an adult, like, wanting a studio space kind of out of town with fields and stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's probably just the words that the author, Mary Hahn, used to describe it. It just, like, lit up in my brain when I read through it. I was like, this is where it came from.
There's some great descriptions in here for a kid's book, pushing the plot along, developing the characters, but the just atmosphere of the place, I really knew where they were. Like, I could put myself in the situation.
Absolutely, I totally
agree.
All
the little subtleties with the animals and the insects and stuff, and you've got Michael, who is the hero for me. I just love Michael. He cracks me up. The nerdy brother with the glasses who just wants to collect bugs and, like, be a naturalist. He's so funny. He's, like, the real rational guy who doesn't believe in anything, and all he wants to do is, like, push his glasses up his face and do science. Yeah, it's
bug collecting.
He's such a great character.
He's the straight in this, and that's perfect.
Really funny.
Because Molly just, like, runs with it. So they get to this house. They start to move in and explore. So the family, after dinner, goes to check the cemetery, and they start looking around at different bodies. They're just laid out there in the grass.
Grave digging. It's their property now.
No. They go and look at different tombstones, and they start to notice that families are buried together. One in particular is the berry family, and they call it the berry patch.
Yes.
But this is a really important thing to note, that families are meant to be buried with each other. And then while they're doing this, Heather goes and she's like poking around the old oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really happens at this point, but she's there. And we also see that Heather is very jealous of Jane, the mother, like the attention that she gets from her father.
Yeah, there's a lot of development on the backstory of Heather being like a troubled child
with jealous.
A really dramatic and tragic background.
Yeah,
struggling.
It's believable.
To know. It is. She's a very manipulative and cunning kid who will say and do anything and then immediately lie about it to get the two older kids in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The parents, from the moment this book starts, constantly take her side. And they're just like, what's your problem? Why do you always have to be like this? And blah, blah, blah.
Well,
and
it's the just, dad does.
The dad is, well, the mom's early on really bad, too. Because I was making notes that there was like, both of them were horrible. But Heather's being really bad. The mom kind of admits later that maybe she's like, maybe she's not loving her either. They're just all struggling to be a family because it's a relatively new unit that's been put together. It's only been like 6 months or something.
Oh, do they say I couldn't find that or I forgot
it's
it?
Pretty quick. And then that's kind of that night. So that first night there, they're all settling in. And then we find out the next day about Mr. Simmons because they wake up to a lawnmower.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the graveyard caretaker. He's like 70 or 80 years old.
Like a kindly older gentleman.
He's an older gentleman. That's all they say right away. But the parents are totally cool with their children being alone with him.
This is straight this 80s
parenting. This is straight up 80s. I was like, oh my gosh. This
can you even imagine
not be more 80s right
now. Like letting your children go and talk for an extended period of time to an old strange man?
That you've
man
never met.
Who
yes.
wants to have a conversation with little children?
Yeah, privately. Yeah.
Not cool.
So we meet Mr. Simmons, and then that's when Heather, so this is a big deal, Heather discovers an unknown grave, and he's like, no, that can't be. I know, I care for all the graves under this big oak tree. She moves some stuff, and she sees that the little tombstone doesn't have a name, but it has an initials.
And they are H-E-H, and also a date.
Yep.
From 1879 to 1886. So that's pretty significant, because we learn that this child is the same age as Heather. And she shares the same initials
yep.
as Heather.
So that's, it's pretty creepy, pretty weird. Heather's being really weird about it. Everybody else is like, whatever, you don't know. Then we flash back. The parents are, in this whole section, just completely checked out.
Well,
there's a lot of, like, you just need to watch her because I have to work. And
well, but there's also, like, they're moving in. Having just moved, I'm kind of like, I get it. You're like, just play. Let me do this work.
I get that, but there's a lot of shaming from the mom, especially
cool.
where she's like, I'm just trying to paint, entertain her for the whole entire day, get out of my way and be back.
You're in charge of this terrible
child. It's
crazy.
It's like, but I remember that in the 80s, my mom just being like, as long as you're back by dinner, I have no clue where you are. That's why I was like hitchhiking down an interstate at one point because
my
parents didn't check on me. It was the 80s. That's just what it was.
Did somebody pick you up?
Yeah, a cop picked me up.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, a sheriff picked me up, took me back to my parents' house because I was trying to hitchhike into town to go see my dad. So they're being totally 80s. And then Molly says about her mom that the things that she's worried about in Baltimore, like the drug dealers, child molesters, speeding cars, those don't exist in Howell.
Oh, no, never.
Yeah, so that's what her mom's saying.
Towns.
And I'm like, I got news for you.
Keep dreaming, lady.
Yeah, they do. And also, this is when I thought, what age range is this targeted to? Because they're talking about child molesters. Mm. They say the word child molester. And I'm like...
But you knew about that word at like 12.
Yeah, but also if the mom's like, look, there are child molesters in Baltimore. Now go hang out with this
Mr.
old
Simmons.
Man you just met in a graveyard.
Well, yeah, I don't know. it's the 80s. I mean, just blow past that. I think it was pretty common, honestly.
Yeah.
So basically the mom is painting. Dave's working in his shed.
Yeah,
he's
studio.
In the carriage house.
Yep.
Molly is reading Watership Down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's,
have you ever read that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And there's a lot of references to books throughout that Molly is reading. So I feel like Molly's maybe a little bit of a baby Mary. you know,
yeah.
the author.
Yeah, I would agree.
Infused her character, perhaps. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe the author's Heather. anyway, so they start to establish routines. The kids are doing their own thing, but Molly's still kind of in charge of watching Heather, which yep. sucks.
Well, so, Heather's a creep.
So. Yeah, Heather keeps wandering off, and Molly finds her at a graveyard talking to the grave, to Helen.
Well, there's a really weird, this whole section is really weird. She's in a trance.
Yeah, she's like zoned out.
The description is
yeah.
really creepy.
It's creepy.
And then she has this quote. She's like, Helen, I'll be your friend.
Yeah.
And so she sees her doing this, and later Molly's telling Michael, but is interrupted by Heather saying, Helen doesn't like either of you. Just wait until she comes. And this kind of starts yeah. the whole, like, from this point on.
That's basically all Heather
says.
Heather
is just like,
wait till Helen
she
comes.
Gets bad. Really, she turns into, like, the good son with Macaulay Culkin or whatever.
For sure.
And it gets really bad. She starts doing really horrible things, lying constantly.
Just getting the Molly and Michael into trouble.
Yeah, and
like,
then keeps threatening
up.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like you. Quit spying on me. Mm-hmm. Wait until Helen comes. She's gonna take care of you.
Yeah.
And it just starts to get progressively creepier from this point on.
Yeah, and at this point, like, that night, Heather has a nightmare about the fire and, like, mm-hmm. wakes up screaming. And the whole family, like, runs in because she's screaming. And they're all trying to figure it out. They're discussing it. And Molly mentions to the parents this Helen character that she's seen Heather talking to. Mm-hmm. And her Heather's dad, Dave, is not cool with this.
No, he's like blaming her for scaring her.
Yeah,
and
he says you're
like,
messing with her.
Yeah.
With Heather and like trying to scare her. And Molly is basically told, don't talk about ghosts, which, I mean, can you imagine a 12-year-old just, like, constantly upsetting everybody talking about ghosts? So I'd be like, come on, just quit
yeah,
saying ghosts.
Yeah, but he does something here that drove me crazy.
Oh, he's horrible.
After he's yelling at her and being like, "Why? What's your problem? How come you're always doing everything wrong?" Then he pats her on the head like a dog. And it's so demeaning. And I just remember, as a kid, if an adult would ever, like, pat me on the head, it drove me bananas.
Honestly, just never pat anybody on the head.
No, but he
unless
does it.
Unless it's a dog.
And I felt sympathetic to Molly until I found out in the scene right after that that she was then to, like, ease her pains, listening to West Side Story on her Walkman. And I was like, nope, that's what she was listening to go to sleep. I will not have any of this musical theater BS.
Yes, for sure. I made note of that and I was like, oh, Eric's going to harshly judge.
Oh, I definitely judged it. I was like, okay, we're done with this.
Well, and for our listeners, we've had friends in the theater world, so we're a little jaded, unfortunately, because we've seen behind the curtain and it's not a pretty place.
Yeah, no, we definitely have. And then also I have another thing. They're talking about the descriptions of all the characters and stuff. And oftentimes, they keep talking about Heather with her hair. And I just have a note that says, if I read the phrase, quote, tangles of hair almost hiding her face one more time, I'm going to lose my mind. We get it. However, on the cover, she has a mullet. So it was really bothering me that they kept talking about her hair and her face. Because then I thought, is the hair that's covering her neck, like,
I feel like in the book she just has normal hair, but perhaps on the cover it's a little mullety.
Okay. Well, I don't need to hear that description anymore.
Okay. So the next day after Molly is told to like stop talking about ghosts and Heather's had the fire nightmare, Molly creeps on Heather. She's like is sneaking on her. And she, as she's doing this, she comes upon a ruinous house. And finds Heather talking to what is described as a shimmering emptiness.
Yeah, well, and it's like the house is like stone and burnt wood and burnt stone. And it's kind of like it's clear that it was somebody's home that was
in a fire.
In a fire. Mm. Yeah.
So as Molly sees this, like her fears are confirmed. It's 100% ghost. Like, put the stamp on it. Ghost confirmed. Ghostbusters.
Yeah, well, she's already told them it's Helen. She's given them the name because she says, wait till Helen comes.
But she hasn't, like, Molly hasn't seen her yet.
No, well, she does here.
Yes.
So this is where she sees, well, Heather's there. And then Heather has a silver locket that Helen gave to her. And Molly says it's bad. But Heather says that she's the only one that's nice to her. And so she's keeping it. And now Heather is getting, like, super possessive and crazy about the relationship she has with Helen, that it's her only friend, and it's starting to distance herself anymore, like being pretty
she's
crazy.
She's been a little bit tranced out by this ghost.
Yeah. So over lunch, Mom makes it clear that Molly's in charge of Heather because they move there to do art, not be parents.
Apparently.
That's what I got. So definitely the notion of...
Once you've got three, just let them go.
And that the kids need to run unchecked in the forest all day and not bother them. That's essentially what she says.
And like, also...
That's not far off of her exact wording.
No, that's true. And also, Molly's really screwing this up. Like, go sit under a tree, read Watership Down, and, like, look at bugs.
Yeah, throw your Walkman with West Side Story away and do something good with your life.
Quit with the ghost stuff and, like, get back to, like... enjoying no parents at all. Like, just not present parents.
Yes.
If you need food, they'll be there with some cereal at breakfast, a sandwich at lunch, and some conversation at dinner.
Dave will guilt you at the end of the day. Uh-huh. Don't worry. So the next morning, Molly and Michael go to the house to explore. So they, you know, are like, oh, let's go check out the ruins. Of course, she's being like, no, Michael, be careful.
I'm so scared.
And he's like, whatever, I'm going to examine this and take specimens.
Yes.
And so they see Molly by the pond, soaked in the rain.
No, they see Heather.
And I mean Heather, sorry.
Yes.
By the pond, soaked in the rain, and she says Helen will get Michael first, like that she's going to come and she's going to take Michael first.
Which, like, what's Michael done? He's just been collecting salamanders and hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, step off, Heather. The only problem is Molly.
Well, and then he takes the locket and says, this was probably yours all along, and you're making all of this up for attention.
Yeah, because the locket says H-E-H on it.
Yeah, but then that's when Heather gives the full name and says it stands for Helen Elizabeth Harper, my friend and your enemy.
Oh,
and
snap.
I loved that section. I was like, yeah, that was so creepy. Yeah.
It's like a good setup for a ghost story, for sure.
It is. And so that's that section. Do you have anything more to add to that?
No. The next chapter, they ride their bikes, Molly and Michael. They decide they're going to figure out the story behind this house.
Well, yeah.
And he's, like, approaching this ghost story with logic. He's like, let's even see. Let's go see who owned this house. Like, he's smart. And Molly's like, no, 100% ghost. Let's just run around screaming about it.
Well, and he's like, there's nobody named Heather. This is all made up. But they're going to go into town on their bikes. This is a really big chapter. This is a very, like, revealing chapter. Mm-hmm. Where the librarian shows them an article on a place called Harper House.
And I love that how helpful this librarian is. Like, Mary Han, like, wrote in this super helpful, super knowledgeable librarian when that was her job.
She was like an archivist. Yeah. So they find out this place called Harper House. That's the place that they've been exploring.
The ruined home.
Yeah. And then they see a photo, and they see a photo of Helen and her mom and her stepdad. They died in a fire. This is all the big reveal. And Helen haunts the pond where she drowned, and the three kids have died there since then. So there's lot packed into this chapter.
Yeah, the full story is that there was a fire. The mother and stepfather died, and their remains were never found. And Helen escaped the fire only to run out of the front door into the, like, disoriented because she was a little kid, and into the pond where she drowned. Because there's talk at some point about, like, weeds and stuff that catch your feet in the pond, which is a really creepy and disturbing visual.
Yeah, and then several kids since then have died in the pond. So there's ghost stories around it. So now they've got a name of the house, they've got the other names, and the name Helen is verified.
And her father's name, not her stepdad, but her real father, who owned the home before, his last name was Harper.
Right. So now they've got it all. And, you know, this is when Molly is like, told you so. And
ghost,
Michael's like, no,
ghost.
And he's still not buying any of it. Then they go back, and Mr. Simmons, they run into Mr. Simmons on the way back, and he says it's just ghost stories, and then offers to take Michael fishing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, could this be more 80s right now?
No, this is dangerous. He's a stranger.
He's stranger danger. So he wants to take him fishing. These parents suck. I don't even know what happened, but something made me upset. Then Molly sees a blue light.
Well, they go out for dinner, Dave and Heather. So there's tension about the ghost, Heather. Molly tattles on Heather for being at the ruined house again.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about this.
And then Heather, like, freaks out. Dave just decides he's angry, and he and Heather are going to go have dinner alone.
Right.
Leaving Molly, Michael, and their mom, Jane, to be back at the church. The mom is upset and goes for a walk, leaving brother and sister home alone.
Yeah. And that's when, so Molly's looking out towards the graveyard and sees this blue light.
Like you do.
And then Heather comes back and says, once they're all back, she says she wishes they were all dead.
And she calls the mom a witch.
Yeah. I was like, whoa, this is chilling.
Yes.
And then later she sneaks out at night into the graveyard, and Molly sees Helen and runs after her. She's like going into the graveyard now at night and being creepy and talking to this ghost.
Well, she like pretends to be asleep, sneaks out the window and goes into the graveyard where Helen is fully visible now.
Yeah. But what the weird thing is that when Molly calls her on it in front of everybody, she denies it all. She's like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah, you're scared.
And then she's like, she's scaring me, Daddy. And then starts crying. And then later, this is the spookiest scene in the whole book for me. I was like, oh, I love this book. Was that Molly is pretending to be asleep because she knows Helen's coming back in. And she's got her back to her. And she's just laying there being like, okay, I'm just going to pretend I'm asleep. And then out of nowhere, she can feel that somebody is beside her. And Heather sneaks back in the window, goes right to Molly's ear as she's like with her back
to
her.
She thinks Molly's asleep.
And just whispers that she'll be sorry when Helen comes. Yeah. It is so scary. I was like,
can you imagine a like really 6-year old whispering that at you?
Yeah. Imagine a 7-year old on top of that.
Oh, jeez. Eric, you're in trouble, mister.
That's one more year. That's crazy. next morning.
Whatever.
Next morning, Heather denies everything when Molly demands that she tells the parents. So now it's like she's lying, manipulating even more. And it's gotten, now she's saying, I wish you were all dead. And Helen's going to come for you all.
I mean, it's getting honestly a little redundant at this point. Okay.
It's true. Yeah, we get it.
Is Helen coming, or are you just going to talk about it?
You know, that's what's funny is that Michael kept being like, you don't scare me. But Molly kept being like, oh, and I kept waiting for Molly to have a freak out because she was 12 to be like, dude, we get it. Shut up. It's kind of like, you know, when the kids are just blabbing and they're like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I heard you the first 400 times you said it.
Quit saying it.
We get it. I was expecting that moment and it never came. It was like Heather was in charge of the whole situation.
Absolutely.
The whole book.
Well, Molly was kind of a wimp.
So then they go to town, the parents and Heather.
Helen. Oh, Heather, yes.
Heather, leaving Molly and Michael behind because they're like, you guys don't get along. We need some space. You guys need to just separate.
Yeah, let's separate our family a little
bit. Then they, they're like left on their own. They're looking around. They're doing some stuff. They come back and then they
Molly and Michael like go and have like a normal brother-sister afternoon. And that's actually kind of magical the way it's written about. They're checking out salamanders and just hanging out in the grass, eating their sandwiches.
I really liked their relationship in this book. I thought it was really well developed.
Yeah.
And they play off of each other really well. They're believable as siblings. But then when they're heading back towards the house after like a fun day of packing, you know, sandwiches and stuff.
A nice little break after all of the build up.
They hear somebody in the house.
Wah-wah.
And when everybody comes in.
The house is being burgled. That's what's happening.
Yes. Burgled.
Burgled.
Burglarized?
Nope. Burgled.
Okay, so it's done been burgled. And then the parents come back and they're like, somebody is in the house.
Hold on, though. Before the parents get back, Molly, not Michael, sees Helen and knows that it was Helen who's messing around in the
house. But Michael doesn't believe her. And then everybody goes back in, and only the kids' rooms, not Heather's, but like all of Molly's stuff, all of Michael's stuff.
And all of their mom.
Well, they don't know that yet. It's all ruined. It's like everything is totally destroyed. There's a message on the wall from Helen. And then when Molly goes to point it out, it like evaporates and nobody sees it. And then Heather threatens Molly right then and there and is like, if you don't stop, she's going to come back for worse. And then it gets even more tragic because they go into the mom's art studio in the church. And everything, the paintings are all slashed and everything's totally damaged. And this part made me laugh so hard just because we're both working artists. And I know this world. The mom clearly earlier says like she's painting a close up of a sunflower and they're living in the middle of nowhere, like in the countryside. Yep. And she has this freak out saying, how are they going to get through winter? I was going to sell my painting to pay the mortgage. And I'm like, at what? A local craft fair.
They'd been having a conversation about craft fairs over dinner at one point.
You're
going to
sell it for $150 at a craft fair.
I don't know. It was the 80s. What was their mortgage?
Like, they're going to pay the mortgage for the whole winter. I was like, okay, I'm not buying any of this. So then they call the police. Officer Green comes, says it was probably kids on drugs from Baltimore. I love the idea of kids being like, let's drive 50 miles and go to this random house, you know, ruin it because we're all on drugs and then drive away.
This is kind of makes sense because in Helen and Molly's room, or Heather and Molly's room, Heather's bed and her side of the room were untouched and Molly's were trashed. If you were, like, totally on drugs and from Baltimore and you were going to break into a house, would you kind of not be like, let's just destroy half of one room?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. Also, side note here, what are Molly and Michael supposed to stop doing to Heather? Because she keeps warning him, if you don't stop, blah, blah, blah. Are they supposed to stop? Just, like, existing?
No, I actually liked this part because she, in her brain, keeps, like, well, she keeps actually telling them, like, you're so mean to me. You're being so mean to me. And I liked this part because it's clear that Heather has some kind of, like, mental illness and is projecting these fears and concerns, and she's almost starting to create this world where in her mind
that's separate from reality. They're
she's totally separating from reality, and the ghost is like perpetuating it. I liked that because they were like, we're not doing anything, and she's like, you're being horrible to me. And I just thought that was really interesting because it was making her even more isolated and crazy.
Okay.
And I thought that was pretty cool. Also, one little side note. When the officer is leaving, do you know what he does?
What?
He pats Molly on the head.
Ah! Jerk.
All right, next day, Molly runs into Mr. Simmons, tells him the whole theory about the ghosts and everything else. She thinks he's going to like be like, you're crazy. And Mr. Simmons says, a little, I forgot to tell you this the first time.
I would think you were crazy, except...
Except my sister said the same exact thing about their cousin's death, who is one of the girls who died in the pond. And then it's this really weird moment where he's like holding it all. But then we don't normally do this, but if you don't mind, there is a really awesome passage
in
this
book.
Oh, this is like when you knew she was, the author was well-read. She was a good writer. She's writing for children, but she's writing for children in a way that's introducing kind of more poetic themes. So this is Molly talking.
Okay.
And I'm just going to read it.
Do it.
Okay. I stared at the earth mounted over Helen's grave. Beneath it was her coffin. In her coffin were her bones. I imagined her skeleton lying on its back, her skull staring up into darkness, held fast by the earth, cradled in the oak tree's roots, trapped forever. I looked at my own arms, still outstretched, and saw the veins running blue under my skin, the bones beneath them, my skeleton, my bones. Someday they would be all that was left of me. They would all lie alone in the dark and the cold while the years spun past, years I would never see.
I remember that.
Keeps going on about the rustling sounds of the forest and death. And I just, It was so beautiful. It was very poetic for a children's book.
I distinctly remember the like black eyes staring into nothing. Mm-hmm. That was so visual for me as a child. So when I read it again, I was like, oh, I remember that. I remember how it made me feel when I was little. Also, at this point, we have Molly deciding that she is going to protect Heather from Helen.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty important because up until then, she'd been kind of like not committed to helping Heather, but more just like Heather's a freak who talks to ghosts. But now she's like, oh, Helen's actually evil and I've got to protect Heather.
Yeah. And now this is where in classic 80s fashion, we talked about this in a previous episode, Return to Oz. Mm-hmm. So like this and Labyrinth and Neverending Story, mm-hmm. classic 80s children's stories, there's always a storm that comes in.
Of course.
When the story starts to get scary, and this is what happens. So Heather goes to the Harper house and Molly...
Hold on. The parents are gone again.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They've gone to Baltimore to replenish the art supplies destroyed in the attack.
They're very self-absorbed. But while the kids have just been running around in the forest with strange men around them. But
no biggie.
So Heather goes to Harper House. Molly tracks her down and a storm starts coming in. Then she finds Helen convincing her to go into the pond. Like, so Helen is basically talking to Heather, saying, you need to come with me. And Molly is seeing all this.
And Heather's hesitant at this point. She's like, but I thought, what about Daddy?
Yep.
Like, she's not willing to just go.
Right. But then Helen sweetens the deal in typical 80s fashion.
It was a solid sell.
This is funny. So she says, come hang out with me, though, in the pond where there's unicorns and elves and dragons and mermaids. And then for a second, there's a section where Molly's like, wait, that sounds pretty good, actually.
I like this.
And then snaps out of it and was like, what was I doing?
It would be cool if the story, she just runs up, shoves Heather out of the way, grabs Helen's hand and just like
dives
goes
in
for
and
it.
Is like, unicorns!
The end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lisa Frank, bye!
So then Helen takes Heather into the pond. Like, it's getting serious now.
This is a scary scene.
It was a scary scene because the storm's coming down. And now Heather is fully gone into the water. Molly dives in and can't find her. She's fully submerged now. Like, that ghost has taken her into the water. Like, three girls before her who have definitely died.
Yes.
And somehow Molly dives under and kind of grabs her hair and pulls her up by the hair.
That hair grabbing scene creeped me out as a kid, and it gave me the crawlies like in my skin as I read it as an adult, because I remembered that feeling. I just said crawlies.
Spooky,
sorry.
Yeah. And she rescues her, yells at Helen, and throws the locket. Like, she realizes that kind of the locket has the control over
And Helen's actually engaging with her now. She's like, let her stay, and all
and
that
she
kind
just
of stuff.
Throws the locket. And it's a really spooky scene. And it's funny because I was like, you know, Neverending Story when he's reading the book. And then he sets it down during the storm and he takes a bite of his sandwich. And he's like, I mustn't. No, I mustn't. And then he picks the book back up and keeps going. That was me in my mid-30s on the train in front of all my... Like, I was reading Wait Till Helen Comes on the train, commuting with all these adults. And I put the book... After this, I was like, ooh, man, she just got pulled under.
What's next?
And then I took a bite of my sandwich and I was like, I mustn't. I mustn't. And then I just kept doing it. Anyway, so she pulls her up. Heather is pissed. She is not happy about this. Mm-hmm. Surprise.
But also, Heather is like unwell. She's been underwater and there's a storm going. So they got to take cover and like get to safety.
Yeah. So she's yelling like her and Helen are just alike and everybody would hate her if they knew who she really was. So we're all of a sudden, we're starting to get into kind of the third act idea.
Heather's got some issues.
So Molly tries to find shelter in the ruins and remembers Michael. We didn't mention this before, but when they had been exploring earlier in the book, Michael found a room with like shelter over it.
Yeah, it was like a half ceiling.
But they didn't want to play in it because it could have been dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that's where they run into because she remembers there was this. But when they run in, the wooden floor gives out and they fall down into this hidden kind
of cellar
section. And they have this moment And then Heather admits, this is the big giveaway.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah, that she started the fire.
By accident. By accident. As a 3-year-old.
But that she thinks that she's basically responsible for her mom's death. And yeah, that's why she's been acting out.
Well, she started the fire by accident and then hid. And her mother died while trying to find her.
But her dad doesn't know this. Yes. And she thinks her dad will not love her if he ever found out the truth. Then while they're, you know, they're having this moment, they discover bones of Helen's parents.
Like an actual skull.
Yeah. In the cellar, the basement area that they've fallen into. And then all of a sudden, Helen appears but doesn't seem to notice them and floats towards her mother's bones, and her mother's ghost appears.
And her stepdad's ghost. Yeah,
and forgives them, or like forgives her, and they kind of all go off together.
Yes.
And that's when Heather decides she's going to go ahead and tell her dad, and Molly's like, yeah, you're going to. And then she runs her hands through Heather's mullet. And she also talks about how she's going to comb her hair when she gets home because of how natty it is. I just, side note.
All of the hair talk gets a little bit weird. Like, I get it that it's like it's symbolic of their new relationship. It's like really intimate and personal, and it like shows that they've crossed one barrier. But it is a little like, okay, quit with the hair.
Yeah, but there is one. Yeah, it's not quite the babysitter. When she's talking about caressing that boy's hair all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that bad.
That was pretty good.
You know what I do like about this section, though? Not the hair stuff, but how she keeps commenting on Heather's, like, bones and hands and stuff. Because she's never held her before. She's never comforted her.
She doesn't know what she's like.
They've never been sisters before. And it's kind of this touching moment where she's, like, discovering
who You're
she
right.
is. Yeah, I really liked that whole section. Okay, and then the family is out looking for him. They're yelling.
Yeah, they finally come.
Yeah,
can
and
you
they
even
find
imagine
him.
Being in a basement at age 12 with a like soaking wet, almost dead girl
with bones next to you
and a like full skeleton, and you've seen ghosts?
Yeah,
I'd not be okay.
Well, Michael finds him, and then Dave comes down and says to Heather, "Let's get you out of here." And then, as an afterthought, it's so funny, looks at Molly and says, "And you too, Molly."
Ugh,
like,
Dave.
It totally was the impression that he wouldn't even have thought to pull her out.
I know. Dave's worse than Helen.
And then there's this great section where Michael's like, "Can I keep the bones? I can study them."
I know.
And the mom
so
is, like, super disgusted. And he was like, "What? It happens all the time."
Mm-hmm.
And then they go home. So they survived this big ordeal. Mm-hmm. And then it's the next morning. And Molly... immediately. So there's this whole thing about Heather saying, don't tell anybody about the fire.
Yeah, she's not ready to tell her dad.
But she's going to, but just please keep it a secret.
Yeah.
The first chance Molly gets with her mom is like, have I got something to tell you?
Well, she's a 12-year-old girl and it's her mom.
Immediately. And then she looks out and sees that Heather has taken her dad for a walk and is telling her.
Well, Heather had told her she was going to go with her dad.
Yeah.
And then Molly was like looking to her mom, like, did I make the right choice? And her mom's like, of course you did. He'll be cool with it. Because Molly has like a moment where she's like, oh, crap. Is he going to be okay with this? She like second guesses her own advice. And I could see that.
Yeah.
Because like, what if he was super mad that his daughter hid and it ended his wife's life?
But it all goes well, and the mom actually starts to be kind of cool towards the end here. And then there's kind of a flash to a funeral where they're going to put the bones of the family and Helen all together.
And this flashes back to the berry patch because they need to be a family buried together.
Yeah. But there's this great scene where all the town folk have come also. So it's like a big ordeal because nothing ever happens in this town.
Yeah. It's a real sense of how boring Hallwell is.
And all the local yokels are around making comments. And Heather is being emotional because she was attached to Helen. And so she's taking it kind of hard. But I wrote down the quote because one of the locals looks at another local and says, "You think she knew them personally?" And I thought, knew the family who died in the 1800s that they're reburying? Like, they're burying the bones
of a family. Well, I think he was just saying that her reaction was like she knew them.
Yeah, but he was kind of being a small town folk.
Well, maybe he'd heard the ghost stories. And
maybe.
He was like...
It just came across as though she knew people from the 1800s personally and was taking this really hard. And then it flashes forward to this great little kind of post-log section about it's next summer. A great descriptive area about them laying in the grass, looking up at the clouds and hanging out.
Like hanging out in the cemetery now.
Like all three of them, though. Now they're like a family. And the kids are in the graveyard. And then all of a sudden on the sculpture, this angel, the locket appears.
Yeah.
And they go up and Heather takes it and opens the locket. And there's a photo of her and then a little note from Helen saying, "Don't ever forget me." And then,
which is kind of mildly threatening, honestly.
I know. I thought that too. I thought, can you just leave me alone? But then it ends, and that's the end of the book. And
it's lovely.
This is such a good book.
It's so good, and I can't wait till our girls are a little bit older, and I can give it to them to read and terrify them a little bit.
It is so well written, and the characters are really well developed.
Yeah, there's so much depth, and it really addresses the family situation that was happening a lot more in the 1980s. Like mixed and blended families, and kind of addresses some of the issues that accompany that kind of a patchwork family.
Well, and the author comes from, she had children and was divorced and moved her kids. And so I think it was really personal, but the characters are so well done. It does sit a little too long on the Helen's going to get you kind of thing. But the moments that are scary are truly scary for this level
for a
of a
ghost
book.
Story?
I was like, this reminded me of like a Poe kind of story, like a classic ghost tale.
Exactly.
It reads so well. All the characters make sense. The story moves along perfectly and it's wrapped up in this great little cautionary, like the family moves on, but they have this experience that they all went through. And it's such a beautiful little classic ghost story. This could be told in the 1800s, the 1700s, now. It's just a great timeless story. This absolutely deserves the credit. It's won a ton of awards.
Because it's a
huge bestseller. And I see why. Like, I'm glad you brought it up for the podcast. But I enjoyed every moment of this book. I thought
it was great.
So much fun to read. And I recommend it to anybody. And because we liked it so much, hopefully you guys haven't been like, oh, they're going to just go on about their social media now and have already like turned off this episode.
Don't do that.
Because we have a little bonus section. If you hang with us, it'll probably not take too long.
No.
But in 2016, there was a feature film adaptation of Wait Till Helen Comes. And so last night, we thought prior to this episode, let's check it out. It was on Amazon for 99 cents. But I was like,
we dropped the dollar.
We did it. And we waited until Helen came on. And then we had all these internet connections. And I was like, oh my gosh, are we going to get through this? But we watched the feature length film. It had Maria Bello was in it. And
she was the only star.
She was the only star. However,
it's a Canadian film.
There were child actors.
Three child actors.
And I'm going to say this about them. Actually, I have a couple notes about these. One, I thought Michael was really well cast.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Molly was really well cast, but they made her...
She was like 3 years older than she should be.
They made her definitely... They made all the kids older, which was fine.
I didn't like
that. What I didn't like was they made Molly in the movie way more sarcastic.
Sarcastic and angsty.
Whatever, Mom. Ugh. And like, it was total angst. And that's not how she was in the book
at
all.
She was innocent.
She was like, what's wrong? How can I help? I just want to be good. Why are they always blaming me?
Yeah,
she was a good kid. And in the movie, they really made her lame. And so...
Yeah. And she had weird stuff about her dad. Like, they wrote in this whole
That he, like, committed suicide. Yeah.
And then he was crazy. Like, okay. I don't know.
So I didn't like her in the movie. I didn't like... The dad was a jerk in the movie, too. They made the mom way nicer than she was in the book. I was like, okay, well, that's not how she
was. Much more present.
Much more maternal. I'll say that. She cared about her kids, first off. And then... But boy, when we got to Heather, could there not be a bigger reminder of why I don't like child actors?
Every word was a little bit
painful.
It
was so painful to watch this girl try and act. And it was not like she had a whole lot to do. She looked the part. She definitely
looked
like what I would expect. But man,
except for no curly hair.
I could not handle it.
It wasn't great.
Her acting was.
And they made a lot of changes.
They made
a ton
of changes from the book, but I didn't really get too caught up on that.
No.
I really could not stand that child actor. And then, so this brings up another point, is I've noticed now between books I've read that have children as the main characters and then watching film adaptations is that I, children are better characters in my brain than on film.
Except for in It.
Yeah, it's a good job.
Really, or Stand By Me.
Or like Stranger Things. I mean, like they do a good job. But,
well, Stranger Things wasn't a book, but...
Well, no, but what I'm saying is like child actors.
Yes.
That, but
it's a challenge.
But for the most part, I realize that when you read a book, you've got these great, like, the kids are really well-rounded and they're delivering their lines like they should because it's in your brain.
Yeah.
But then when you watch it in person, it's like, ugh.
That little girl's sheltered and doesn't understand the pain of having accidentally killed her mother, obviously.
That said, the movie was bad, but it was fun to watch.
It felt like something you would watch on a Sunday afternoon on TNT.
Yeah, it was definitely, it had its moments. Actually, the scary scenes were really scary. Mm. The score was way more horror-themed than the book. Than the movie. I thought that the score made it scarier than it even should be.
Yeah.
The ghost effects were very Canadian. Like, they were very, are you afraid of the dark kind of...
How weird that it's a Canadian effect and you can go, oh, yeah.
I could have told you. Yeah, absolutely. I knew. I was like, it's a Canadian ghost.
It was distinctly Canadian. So, also, you know what bothered me most about this movie, weirdly enough, was that it was set in the fall. I know they were trying to get that Halloween vibe, but what I loved about this book was that like hot summer feel and how it all happened in this summery, bright an environment, this dark thing happening, that contrast I really loved, and they instead just went full dark in the movie and it lost it.
Yeah, there's a couple other little details that bothered me about the movie adaptation too. One is the ruins, the Harper House.
Yeah, it was, like a wall.
Yeah, that was it. And that's not how at all it was in the book.
It was a ruined house.
And then also the church. There was a very clear line in there that says, it was a church, but it didn't have a steeple.
Mm-hmm.
And this one definitely had a steeple. And I'm like, come on, guys. That was like right there, the opening
line. It was
a
single story church.
Like, you shouldn't have done that. And so I don't know. But all in all, my biggest gripe with the film was the ending was so abrupt.
Yeah.
They didn't do any of the post, like them coming together, them like then moving on with their lives and being a family, which is one of the most beautiful parts of the whole book.
Yeah, the conclusion of this family healing.
They just concluded it with the ghosts finding each other and then like drifting off into the sky like ectoplasm. And I was like, okay, well, it really caught me off guard.
Yeah, we were just both like, oh.
But the book was, the movie is what it is. I'm glad we watched it. It was kind of fun to watch it come to life.
Sure.
But it will not even kind of touch the book.
Nah. But the author is in the movie.
She does. She has a cameo as the librarian.
I know. That made me so happy. And when I saw her, I was like, yes, that's you for sure.
Yeah. So that is a little film review of Wait Till Helen Comes. I can't recommend this book enough. And I know
you could try
and be cool and say, I don't read kids' literature. Or you could say, you want a good ghost story with none of the weight.
It's classic.
It is a classic tale. And it is so well done.
So good.
So
it stood up to my 12-year-old memory of it.
I loved this book. I loved every bit of it.
Good.
So yeah, it was so much fun to read on the train. It was so funny. I went through it. I started it on the way home one day. And you're like, are you not done with it yet? But I had only read for like half an hour. And I'm like, I'm already halfway through. And then the next morning, I'm like, okay, I'm done now.
Yeah, it doesn't take long to read.
It does not take long at all.
It's like a short story that you read. I mean, it's, I think, 174 pages. But pages for a 12-year-old, so you'll blast through it if you read it in an afternoon.
Yeah, and for those of you who have read it, if you have nostalgia for it, leave a comment on our Instagram. Let us know, because I'd love to hear people's personal stories, because I think people have some good memories with this one. This is a classic.
Yeah, and, so good.
If you like the episode, you like what we're doing, you can give us a little rating, star rating on iTunes.
Yeah, thank you.
You can follow us on Podbean and Spotify and iTunes at Laser Graves. And then we're on Instagram at Laser Graves. It's every Tuesday. We have a new episode. I don't know what we're doing. We don't have next...
Sorceress, right?
No,
oh,
that was
no,
last...
we did that last week. I'm all off. What day is it?
So keep with us, and we'll keep bringing you the 80s good stuff. I don't know what we're doing next week, but hopefully
where
it'll be fun. Nobody knows what's going on anymore.
I don't know.
But thanks, everybody. If you want to follow us on Instagram, I'm at EK Wimmer.
I'm at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks. Bye.